I am thirsty. And then he says, it is fulfilled. And he dies. God comes to us as one who is thirsty, above all, for each of us.
Sin and Spirituality, a special edition of Vatican Viewpoint, a podcast produced by Vatican Radio. I'm your host, Devin Watkins. The Church is journeying toward the second session of the 16th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod, which takes place in the Vatican in October 2024. To help Catholics prepare, we're spending a few weeks exploring the spirituality of synodality. We're returning to the reflections that Dominican Father Timothy Radcliffe offered to Synod participants in October 2023. In this seventh episode, let's listen to the meditation offered by the former master of the Order of Preachers at last year's Synod Assembly, entitled The Samaritan Woman at the Well.
How can we all be formed for a communion that overflows into mission? In St. John's Gospel, chapter 4, we hear of the encounter of Jesus with the woman at the well. At the beginning, she's alone, a solitary figure. By the end, she's transformed into the first preacher of the gospel. Just as the first preacher of the resurrection will be another woman, Mary Magdalene, the apostle of the apostles. Two women, one who launches the preaching of God with us, the incarnation, and the second, the good news of the resurrection. How does Jesus overcome her isolation? The encounter begins with just a few words, three in Greek. Give me a drink. Jesus is thirsty. Thirsty for more than water. The whole of John's Gospel is structured around Jesus' thirst. His first sign was the offering of wine for the thirsty guests at the wedding in Cana. And almost his last words on the cross, I am thirsty. And then he says, it is fulfilled. And he dies. God comes to us as one who is thirsty, above all, for each of us. My student master, when I joined the order, Geoffrey Preston, wrote, salvation is about God longing for us, being racked with thirst for us, God wanting us more than we could ever want him. The 14th century English mystic Julian of Norwich, she said, the longing and spiritual thirst of Christ lasts until doomsday. God thirsted for this fallen woman so much that he became human. He shared with her his most precious thing, the divine name, I am. Is the one speaking to you. It is as if the incarnation happened just for her. She learns to be thirsty too. First of all for water, so that she need not come to the well every day. Then she discovers a deeper thirst. Until now she's gone from man to man. Now she discovers the one for whom she had always been thirsting without knowing it. As Romana the Melodist said, often people's erratic sex life is a fumbling after their deepest thirst for God. Our sins, our failures, are usually mistaken attempts to find the one for whom we most long. But the Lord is waiting patiently for us by our wells, inviting us to thirst for more. So formation for a communion which radiates is learning to thirst and hunger ever more deeply. We begin with our ordinary desires. When I was ill in hospital, I was not allowed to drink anything for 3 weeks. I was filled with raging thirst. Nothing ever tasted so good as that first glass of water, not even whiskey. But slowly I learnt to thirst for more. O God, you are my God, for you I long. A dry, weary land without water. What isolates us from each other, what impedes communion, is that we get trapped in small desires, little satisfactions, such as beating our opponents, having status, grand titles. According to the oral tradition, when Thomas Aquinas was asked by his sister, Theodora, how to become a saint, he replied with one word, vele, want it. Constantly Jesus asks people who come to him, what do you want? What can I do for you? The Lord wants to give us the fullness of love. Do we want it? So our formation for solidarity, for communion, is learning to become people filled with deep desire. Pedro Arrupe, I'm being very ecumenical, yeah? The marvelous Superior General of the Jesuits wrote, nothing is more practical than finding God. That is, than falling in love in a quite absolute final way. What you're in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. It'll decide what will get you out of bed in the morning, what you do with your evenings, how you spend your weekends, what you read, who you know, what breaks your heart, what amazes you with joy and gratitude. Fall in love, stay in love, and it will decide everything. That passionate man, that great African, St. Augustine exclaimed, I tasted you, and now I hunger and thirst for you. You touched me, and I have burnt for your peace. So how do we become passionate people, passionate for the gospel, filled with love for each other, without disaster? That is a fundamental question for our formation, especially, I think, for our seminarians. Jesus' love for this nameless woman sets her free. She becomes the first preacher, but we never hear of her again. A synodal church will be one in which we are formed for unpossessive love, a love that doesn't flee the other person, nor take possession of them, a love that is not abusive, nor cold. First, it is an intensely personal encounter between two people. Jesus meets her as she truly is. You're right in saying, I have no husband, for you've had five husbands, and the one you are now with is not your husband. What you say is true. She gets heated in response and replies mockingly, oh, so you're a prophet, are you? We should be formed for deeply personal encounters with each other, in which we transcend easy labels. Love is personal. hatred is abstract. I quote again Graham Greene's novel, The Power and the Glory. Hate is a failure of the imagination. St. Paul's very personal encounter and disagreement with St. Peter was hard, but it was truly an encounter. The Holy See is founded on the passionate, angry, but real encounter of two people. The people whom St. Paul could not abide were the underhand spies who gossip and work secretly, whispering in the corridors, hiding who they were with deceitful smiles. Open disagreement is not the problem. So many people feel excluded or marginalized in our church because we've slapped labels on them. If you really meet somebody, you may become angry, but hatred cannot be sustained in a truly personal encounter. If you glimpse their humanity, you will see one, the one who created them and sustains them in being, whose name is I Am. So the foundation of our loving but unpossessive encounter with each other is surely the encounter of each of us with the Lord at our own well, with our failures, our weaknesses, our desires. He knows us as we are, and he sets us free to encounter each other with a love that liberates and does not control. In the silence of prayer, we are made free to meet each other. She meets the one who knows her totally, and this impels her on her mission, the communion which radiates. Come and see the man who told me everything I have ever done. Until now, she has lived in shame and concealment, fearing the judgment of her fellow citizens. She goes to the well by midday when no one else will be there. But now the Lord has shone the light on all that she is and loves her. After the fall, we saw Adam and Eve hide from the sight of God, ashamed. Now she steps into the light. Formation for synodality should peel away our disguises and our masks so that we step into the light. Then we shall be able to mediate God's unpossessive pleasure in every one of us, in which there is no shame. I conclude with two little examples. I shall never forget an AIDS clinic called Mashambanzu on the edge of Harare, Zimbabwe. The word literally means the time when elephants wash, which is the dawn. They go down to the river, splash around, squirt water over themselves and each other. It's a time of joy and play. And most of the patients were young people, teenagers, who didn't have long to live. But it was a place of joy. I remember one young lad called Courage, who filled the place with laughter. In Phnom Penh, in Cambodia, I visited another AIDS hospice run by a priest called Jim. He and his helpers collected people who were dying of AIDS in the street and brought them back to this simple wooden hut. One young man had just been brought in. He was emaciated. He did not have long to live. They were washing and cutting his hair, and his face was blissful. This was God's child in whom the Father delights. The disciples return with food. They're shocked to see Jesus talking to this fallen woman. Wells are places of romantic encounter in the Bible. As with her, the conversation has a slow beginning, two words, Rabbi, eat. But she's become a preacher before them. Our role as priests is often to support those who've already begun to reap the harvest before we've even woken up.
Synod Spirituality, this episode of Vatican Viewpoint. Special thanks to Stephanie Bross. We'll be back again next week.